once recently, and then they were clearing stuff out, and they wanted me to go through a bunch of old badges. They found a big old bag of old badges,
right,
from various sort of family excursions. And one of them I found from a family trip was this.
It explains so much.
Can you read that?
For the listener, Mike is holding up a blue badge with an image of the atom being split, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it says Sellafield Visitor Centre.
And in case you're unclear what that means a family trip to a nuclear power plant.
And as if it wasn't clearly a bad idea enough, it's literally got a picture of a complicated atom, which presumably is... If you were to take a microscope to any part of your body now, Mike, it would have that atom in it, and there'd be loads
pinging around
just,
within
just
it,
just pinging around you like a sort of pinball.
Is Sellafield in the north of England?
Yes, kind of Lake District, Cumbria.
Was it shut down? Was it shut down for safety reasons, or was it fine?
I think it's still pumping out hot, sweet electricity.
Yeah, and pumping out good family entertainment day in, day out.
Yeah.
Do you think, as a target for us, this could be the biggest Pompidou discount yet?
Is this just for the visitor centre and the gift shop? Or is this
all the electricity created by the nuclear
national grid?
I think it should be a discount.
Try it. Someone try it.
I think it should be a discount for the tour and a discount for all the health, all the sort of health interventions that you'll inevitably need for the rest of your life.
Population scale.
After the tour, yeah. Do you remember the tour, Mike? Do you remember anything about it?
I do vaguely. The thing I mainly remember is involving quite a lot of reassurance that it would be absolutely fine, and they wouldn't have a visitor centre if it wasn't completely safe.
Was it mainly safety chat then?
It was mainly safety chat.
Don't worry, this is completely safe. And also, nuclear energy in general is completely safe. So everything's just safe. Welcome to the safe zone. Here's our mascot. Dr. Safe, he's a scientist. Always goes on about how things are safe.
Yes, he is wearing a hazmat suit and he is standing 3,000 metres away, but he is safe. Yeah.
And he's talking to us over an intercom through a screen, even though it's the early 90s, so actually pretty impressive technology.
And the water we're hosing you down with constantly is safe. This is a safe hose.
It's completely safe.
Please drink your iodine.
Your family members only appear to be glowing because you love them so much. Yeah, blimey.
And also, Mike, this must have been in the shadow of Chernobyl, right? If you were, you know, a young kid.
Yeah. When was Chernobyl? Was
Chernobyl's
that,
what, 86?
Yeah. Oh, it must have been, within a few years after that, I'm sure. Late 80s, I reckon, this would have happened, most likely.
And also, that means Craig Mazin hadn't even turned his thoughts to The Hangover Part 2, let alone Chernobyl. Isn't it?
It's that early.
In
the nuclear power story.
I think my problem with childhood memories and things like that is if I had been to Sellafield, I would now, when I'm trying to access those memories, as we're going to try and plumb from you, Mike, this episode, they would be so intrinsically linked with HBO's Chernobyl, I wouldn't be able to pull apart which bits were from HBO's Chernobyl and which bits were from my childhood visit to Sellafield. So the legions of naked Russian firemen, that's probably... Chernobyl.
There were lots of naked coal. There were lots of coal miners who were naked just from the waist down. Definitely.
Yeah.
Pretty sure my cheese sandwich did taste of iron. I don't know why.
The big tiger walking through. That's from Hangover 2.
It's possible that not many people know that the writer of Chernobyl was the same person who wrote The Hangover 2. This is a public service announcement.
Yeah. That's where you find that out.
So in that, because I'm imagining a nuclear power plant, you can't.
You can't look under the bonnet.
You can't get in the reactor. Although, Mike, this was
the 80s.
This was the 80s, even.
You get stuck in. Free samples. I think I've got a hot, glowing chunk of uranium to take in my little pocket. To feed to the cat when we get back.
I'm picturing you, Mike, sort of dressed up, putting on a little atom suit. So it's just your sort of 9-year-old mustachioed face sticking out of a little...
But it's a kid's one, so it's made out of polyester.
Okay. And then just shoving you into the reactor and just sort of seeing what happens.
Have a fish around. Be brave, you're perfectly safe, son.
Obviously, you can't get into the reactor. You can't get in amongst the carbon rods.
No.
You can't get in amongst the coolants.
I assume there must have been some sort of gantry somewhere, but I don't know if that gantry, how close that gantry would go to the the rods and the coolant. So I assume the gantry is probably to look at a view of the building within which is the main gantry at which you can look at the stuff.
Exactly. It's just gantries within gantries. So I'm guessing that there's the stuff that's actually happening in the reactor, and then there's the bits that humans are allowed to visit, which will just be corridors, meeting rooms, breakout rooms, staff kitchen, toilets. Would it just be, were you not just visiting an office, essentially?
Yeah, probably an office with probably some blurbs. They're probably just, yeah. They're probably just some blurbs 12 miles away from the actual site.
Yeah.
Which 9-year-old me would have been very happy with.
They're missing a trick if they don't have a toilet that empties directly into the reactor.
For that crackle and fizz.
It's true, actually.
Well, yeah, like shit directly into a nuclear reactor. I'd pay for that.
Yeah.
It sounds high risk, doesn't it? Think of the beast you could create.
You fools.
It's a Sellafield turd monster.
6 years now I've been on the run from an intelligent version of one of my own turds that you created. 6 years. I've had to make a false identity.
I'm so tired.
I'm so tired.
I miss my children.
And my children miss me, I think, although they seem to be reasonably happy with their new turd version of me, Dad.
Was there much megafauna around, Mike? You know, like huge foxes, giant mice the size of cars, that kind of thing.
Was there a lot of announcements going, no, they're just very close. It's not a giant fox, it's just incredibly close.
There were giant foxes that were very close. There were definitely a lot of internationally prize-winning horticulturalists.
Mm. Yeah.
Now that I think of it.
Yeah.
Now that I think about that 50-foot cucumber. Was it down to the fertilizer?
Was it like everything seemed fine until you got into the lunch bit and it was like, oh my God, it's a ghastly bacon with eyeballs and like talking broccoli and oh, jeez.
Oh, you'd have to kill your bacon sign at least 4 times before you could get it down. It was intense, emotionally exhausting experience. But I think I quite enjoyed it.
I have quite a vivid memory of going to a power station
really?
Near Bristol when I was a kid, but I don't think it was nuclear. I think it was coal-fired. But I remember it, yeah, quite vividly. It was quite exciting.
Did you catch the Big Pit on the way, make it a big old coal day?
That would be good, wouldn't it? You could deliver coal from Big Pit.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, Big Pit is Wales's premier attraction. It is a former mine that you can go down. You're taken around by ex-miners, and it's one of the best days out you can have in the United Kingdom.
It's a classic.
I've never done Big Pit. Have you done Big Pit, Mike, as well?
Yeah, I've done Big Pit, all right.
It's a good Big Pit.
Have you taken your kids to Big Pit?
I've not, actually. That's a good point. No.
They're going to have the best. It's the best.
But I definitely had more than one Big Pit in my childhood, visiting Grandma.
Mm. Oh, it's so good.
So what happens when you get down in there? Is it little railway tracks?
To Big Pit.
Is Big Pit. Deep Pit?
Deep Pit. Big deep, Pit. Yeah.
Big Pit, Deep Pit.
When you get down there, there's about 1,000 leopards down there. Okay. Albino leopards. They're blind. They're albino. And they work on smell. So you
have to make sure.
Constantly washing yourself as you walk around it. Yeah.
They're not dangerous, though, because their teeth are so soft because they have no access to any sort of vitamin D, no sunlight. They're quite spongy. They tickle.
Yeah.
But it is quite distressing having to remove 6 or 7 of them from your own face.
When you go down there, a nice old... It certainly used to be ex-miners used to take you around. I don't know if that's still the case. And they would tell you what life was like down there. And the answer is... horrifying.
And... do they...
Which kids really want to hear. You want to hear about this.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Do they dress it up? Or do they try and make... do they try and put a positive spin on what it was like? Or is it like, this was grim?
No, to be fair, they are quite positive about it. Mm.
Presumably it's very, very dangerous. You're in the dark. You're covered in sort of soot and dirt and grime. You can barely
But there's
breathe.
A lot of camaraderie, I think, is the main thing.
Because
you're doing something quite dangerous and horrible. So
a necklace of dead canaries.
There's a nice bit where you go through to a big open communal showers.
Okay.
I just thought, isn't that nice? They all used to have a nice shower together. They felt... you know, that at ease in each other's company. Isn't that nice?
Sort of prison, quite prison-like then. Sort of prison. There's a prison-level perks, I'd say, a communal shower.
Speaking of going to parents' houses and then finding things from your youth, I went to my parents' house this week and they gave me a load of stuff that they'd found in their attic that I might want.
Mm-hmm.
They gave me this. I don't know if you want to read this out.
Certificate of Achievement by Careers Wales to certify that Benjamin Partridge has successfully completed a business dynamics program.
Of course he has.
Signed by David Millar, no less.
David Millar himself? the man who the what, from you know the term millionaire comes from him. Millionaire, the first person to make £1 million. David Millar. That's why it's called milliardaire. Millionaire. If only you'd worked with Susan Billar. So, Ben, this makes so much sense of why you have made Three Bean Salad such a profitable and efficient business model, which we are now able to franchise around the world. There's now
Ben is able to.
Yeah,
you and I are just employees.
He's made that clear.
I think we're contractors technically. We're technically contractors.
I certainly
I've been told. Yeah, Ben told me I don't have a pension anymore. My pension is gone.
I know, but Mike, did you not see the PowerPoint that Ben did for us? Yeah, we've got total flexibility now. We could lose on. We've got total flexibility. You don't have to have 2 weeks of holiday a year. You don't have to have any holiday.
We can work off site and off job, can't
we?
Yeah, whenever we like.
We cannot even work if he fires us. We've got total. There's no.
Guys, I offered you a communal shower.
The thing is, what we learned, Ben, is the thing about communal showers is there's a number of people above which becomes communal. Like two isn't communal. It's actually not enough people for it to feel private, weirdly.
We have been sending invitations out to other freelancers we know, but no one's taking us up on the offer.
And you can't have a shower with a cease and desist letter. You can't.
Well, what if you invited the other Three Bean Salad franchises around the world? So there's Michel and Enrique.
That's right. What from Insalata de Tres...
Bino.
Insalata de Tres Bino.
Correct.
But there's three Insalata de Tres Binos. There's the Argentinian one, there's the Mexican one, and there's the
El Salvadorian one as well.
And the El Salvadorian
which
one.
Which is really good, actually.
Well, I'm getting Panama off the ground this week as well, so that's going to be a big money spinner. No tax over there, so obviously.
It's good.
A lot of the Three Bean money goes through there.
That all feeds back into it. So, Ben, it's absolute genius your idea to franchise it, though. So, talk us through it, because basically... People apply, don't they, to be a Three Bean Salad franchisee?
Well, hang on, you're putting the cart before the horses. I run a sort of roadshow.
That's right. Yeah. which me and Mike have to do on your behalf because you're too busy. But because we don't really
franchising and delegation is absolutely key to your business model, isn't it? At all times.
But we do the roadshow. But weirdly, I couldn't actually tell you what happens in the roadshow because the way you've controlled the script and the costuming and stuff is that Mike and I don't actually understand what we're doing. So we just say sort of noises at certain times.
Separate words, separate syllables.
Even the words are broken down. Sometimes I'm wearing a stiletto on one foot and a sort of fox paw, a giant fox paw on the other foot. I don't know why.
Even though you're in an opaque booth.
Completely opaque booth.
You still have to wear
point.
This footwear.
So Ben, can you explain what is the roadshow all about?
So roadshow goes from conference centre to conference centre across the world.
Yep. €750 registration fee, I seem to
correct.
Remember.
Yeah.
Someone complaining about.
That's
yes.
Right.
Well, that's the discounted rate that you get if you go through our Instagram advert, Mike. If you just walk up, of course, the walk up fee of 2,000.
And everyone on the staff
euros.
Everyone on the staff is wearing what apparently is the world's smallest lanyards. Is that right? is that a money saving thing? Because you've shaved.
Smallest and most brittle, yes.
Yeah, because a lot of us people have been accidentally swallowing them and stuff. You've got a few. Obviously, there's a few lawsuits coming your way, but that's just par for the course, isn't it? With this kind of thing.
If you swallow your lanyard, you've got to buy a new lanyard. I just want to make that very clear to anyone coming to the roadshow.
From you,
yes, from me.
You've got a monopoly on the tiny lanyards, haven't you?
Yeah, and the second lanyard costs more than the first lanyard.
Mm-hmm. And it's even smaller.
You have to insure it as well.
That's right.
Compulsory insurance.
And you're right, Henry, the second one is even smaller and more brittle.
And therefore, easier to swallow and more damaging in the event of swallowing.
So the road through, goes from city to city, just letting potential franchisers or franchisees know the benefits of having your own Three Bean Salad franchise. And people are taking me up on it around the world.
And so they subscribe. So what happens is you send them a kit, don't you, which has the basics what they need. So that's
Again, you're putting the cup before the horse. Sorry. Here, they then have to come to the training,
the workshop
sessions.
But can I say this explains why I have to dress up as a horse and Mike as a cart sometimes, isn't it? Because and we have to, and while saying beware, don't do this. Yeah.
Well, the reason maybe you didn't think about this is because you two are both fully anaesthetized for the training sessions.
That's right. Yeah.
But yes, you're heavily.
I don't remember a single one.
You are heavily involved.
Yeah.
You'll just never know what happens.
I'm often quite bruised afterwards, which I have been meaning to ask you about.
Yeah, that's the bit where we hurl you off the Angel of the North.
Okay.
Which is a metaphor.
Yeah. For what happens if you ever try and exit the franchise once you've signed on. Because it's one of the things is, you say it's the hard hug of a mafia boss, isn't it, that you give your employees, which is you will protect them, but you will also destroy them.
Yeah. Well, once they've sung the jingle of allegiance, that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
The rule is you can only leave the franchise on the day of my daughter's wedding. I don't have any children.
And that is how you get a certificate from David Millar
with that kind of strategic thinking.
But that's why, Ben, obviously someone in your position, very powerful, you have to spend a lot of money on security. And you have an entire team now that is deployed against people that have hired teams made up of ninjas and the agricultural semen burglars.
So here's some combination. Never combined before in history.
Never combined. There's never been a reason to combine them until now. And obviously, so people are trying to secretly steal semen from you, aren't they?
You can use the words, Henry. Milk me. What you're looking for.
To milk you in your sleep. So as to then use IVF to then create a daughter.
Yes.
Obviously then wait for her to reach your marriage age, bring her up, get her married off.
Because that's the tragedy of the ninja, isn't it? That a ninja can give you one of the best handies on the planet, but you don't know it's happened.
Exactly. That's the real tragedy of one of the main tragedies of the ninja. And of course, if anyone's seen them, I was going to say the Seven Samurai, but it's called the Seven Samurais, not the Seven Ninjas. So,
is there a difference? Is a ninja a samurai? Is a samurai a ninja? I don't know.
Over to Mike.
It's time for Provincial Dad Chat. Who's hit my bloody walking boots?
I'm not saying it's ruined the holiday. I'm just saying I asked for rum raisin.
Get your skates on, kids, otherwise we'll miss the inflatable session.
She's taking her mother to see Blood Brothers, which means more Top Gear time for me.
Why would I need to go and see a podiatrist?
Of course I've kept the warranty information, darling.
So. Well, ninjas...
Is it like the Netherlands and Holland and Holland and the Netherlands?
Oh, golly, no. No, well, the samurai, they were the honourable warrior class, right? The knights.
Oh, God. He loves this shit.
Who would follow a leader, a shogun, right? Whereas a ninja, they were warriors, but they didn't fit into the accepted hierarchy, social structures of a feudal Japan.
Mike, look. Look, I've been married to you for a long time. Of course I love you, but can you please just stop? Everyone's just trying to enjoy a pretty relaxed barbecue. It's a Saturday afternoon. Can you stop talking to everyone's children about like the history of ninjas?
You said feudal. Remember, Mike, feudal is one of your warning words, isn't it? You're saying feudal and you've gone too far.
Saying feudal. It's a sign, isn't it? We agreed on this. Yeah? It's the first danger door. The first danger door is feudal. The second danger door is samurai. And when you've gone too far, it's when you're talking about how they fold and refold and refold the metal on the swords. Just stick to Wi-Fi speeds and whether diesel's going to make a comeback.
And please tell me once and for all, is our son called Sam because in your head he's called Samurai? Is it true?
And is our daughter called Nina with a silent J because that spells ninja? Yeah, no, so Ben, what happens is you send them a kit, don't you? Once they've joined up, they get a kit
Well, when they leave the training compound in Aldershot.
Well, if they leave the training compound.
They are given the kit.
They're given the kit, which is...
Well, it's Mike and Henry outfits.
It's a bald head mask for me.
A mid-face merkin for me.
Well, it's actually, I bought a job lot of Sven Goran Eriksson head masks. Which we then shaved down to Henry Packer.
in fact, the whole business idea just came out of you going, "What the fuck am I going to do with all these Sven Goran Eriksson head masks I've got?"
I've had them since 2004.
Oh God!
They told me to put my money in bricks and mortar. I didn't believe them. I thought I was going to put my money into rubber Sven Goran Eriksson's.
He's going to be the manager of England forever. He is. Come on, he just is.
In fact, Henry, our entire friendship, when I first met you, I thought, here we go, finally. If we can together one day build a podcast that I can franchise.
So it's the Sven for Mark. It's the mid-face merkin for Mike, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Mike, as you said.
Yes.
What is it for Ben?
Well, the thing is, I'm actually Ben in all the podcasts.
Oh, right, because of Zoom.
Mm. Yeah, so I can do Zoom. So I'm now doing upwards of 100 podcasts a week.
Okay, yeah.
So it's me and then, yeah, Enrique and Mikel, for example. Yeah. Or
Henri and Michel.
Henrik and Mika.
Henrik and Mika.
Across the world.
Yeah, so it's getting pretty busy for me.
And so obviously they've all got Patreons and they've got advertising revenues in their own territories.
You just have to get the jingles translated periodically.
And is it true that, because normally in a franchise a percentage of that would go to you, but is it true that you get all of that and then you simply pay them in healthcare vouchers? Healthcare vouchers, don't you?
Which they have to use at my hospital in Aldershot.
Yeah.
If they can get to it.
If they can get to it.
The compound is very secure.
Yeah. And it's actually only a virtual hospital anyway. The server's in Aldershot, but the hospital is entirely virtual, isn't it?
When I broke my arm recently, as I mentioned before, I didn't go to the fracture clinic. I went to the virtual fracture clinic.
Did you?
Wow.
Which was... an email.
Welcome to your virtual fracture clinic. Is that what it said?
VFC.
This is it.
They really made the virtual fracture clinic sound like it was going to be this hugely space-age thing.
AI.
A drone was going to hover over your front door and x-ray you.
Exactly.
As you stepped out and disappear again.
When in reality, it was just a tired doctor sending me an email that, if we're honest, didn't make sense.
So was it like one of those scenes in an action film where someone's sort of telling you, you're having to tourniquet yourself and stuff, but you're having to wait for the emails to come in to tell you which thing to do next and stuff? Was it that?
Or did you go and see a gangland vet to sort it out?
I just toughed it out, to be honest. I mean, you know, the fact that my arm now only bends 20 or 30 degrees doesn't matter, does it? It's
yeah.
I never really use my right arm very much anyway.
And it doesn't bend in the human direction, does it?
It just bends into your body.
Yeah, yeah. It has a sort of trestle table leg. It sort of retracts into you, doesn't it? So it feels like we could pop you out easily at a fate.
It can get snagged occasionally, which is quite irritating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine a deck chair in the wind. That's kind of what my arm...
And imagine a comic scene would be a sort of a windy day and Ben in swimming trunks wrestling with what you think is a deck chair, but he's actually just trying to open up his own arm. Isn't it? Meanwhile, a toupee flies off his head and a seagull shits on his...
It's not a toupee, it's a Sven Goran Eriksson head mask. Let's turn on the Bee Machine.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
And instead of playing the normal Bee Machine jingle, we've got one sent in by Will.
Oh, thanks, Will.
Cheers, Will.
Dear Beans, it occurred to me the other day that no one has actually ever heard what the Bee Machine sounds like in operation. You have alluded to the fact that it is stitched onto, into, and throughout Ben's body, mm-hmm. like a collaboration between Cronenberg and Pompidou, mm-hmm. correct? However, have any of my fellow listeners paused to think about what this would sound like? In fact, I'm quite sure that the cute jingle that plays is entirely there to cover up the horrifying cacophony that activating the Bee Machine makes.
Well, you're right there. It's done for your safety.
Exactly. There's a very, very, very good reason.
If a child was to accidentally chance upon the podcast... and hear that, they're done for.
And we've got it. We've got the MP3s, haven't we, Ben? You've got them.
Well,
you keep them as almost as a kind of insurance.
Well, they're technically under sanction by the UN, aren't they?
I think that's right.
Hans Blick is coming to inspect them next week,
even though he's dead.
Yeah.
he faked his own death to become the secret weapons inspector of the bean machine.
That's right. Oh, and now who's being naive? You think Hans Blix is capable of dying? No. Well, Hans Blix is actually something which is passed on from father to son, isn't it? There's always been a Hans Blix and there always will be one.
Yeah, it's like the Duchy of Lancaster.
Very, very similar.
Well, William writes, it was this conspiracy that led me to dig into the dark web, and what I discovered shocked and disgusted me. Here is the full bee machine summoning ritual in all its horrific splendour. The truth must be heard. So it seems like he's managed to get hold of those MP3s, Henry.
Even though we've been trying to shut them down.
Yeah.
That's terrifying. You've been hacked, potentially.
Yeah. So shall we play it?
Okay, but this comes with a warning.
Don't listen.
Don't listen to this.
Don't listen to this.
Under any circumstances. So hopefully you didn't listen to that for your own safety. But yeah. I mean, if you did, I should say thank you to the baritones and castrati of the bean machine choral scholars.
Yeah.
Who live such a hard life. It's a very tough existence. They have to eschew personal possessions, love, human connection.
And thank you again, Mike, for castrating them so well.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure.
And so vigorously.
And so lovingly.
Wasn't it? And it was almost like we had to go, Mike, come and stop. They're already castrated. Stop it.
We've got enough boy sopranos, Mike. Stop. We need some more lower register. We've run out.
You're going to have to restrate a few of these guys. Can you do that? Get stitching.
Oh, God. Well, that's dangerous material that we've released there.
Yeah, very bad stuff. Will, that's terrible of you.
Yeah. The thing about the bean machine, though, is it's levels, isn't it? So there are different levels and you can go deeper and deeper into it, and actually no one's sure exactly where it ends, because that's the kind of occult level. There's a level of the bean machine which is operated by people with sort of hooded, who meet up in, well, like occultists do. They always meet up in a situation with no furniture, so they never get to sit and do meetings. They're always standing around, aren't they, with the hoods. So it's a furnitureless, sinister room with some sort of star on the floor.
Usually marble flooring.
Usually marble flooring, so very, very hard to heat, isn't it, those spaces?
Cool in the summer, though. which is good if you've got to wear a lot of hoods, you know.
Yeah.
And a lovely acoustic, as we heard in recording.
Yeah. Lovely acoustic.
Yeah, very springy.
You've got to have lots of nooks and crannies as well for people that have infiltrated the meeting, haven't you?
To look on.
To look on.
Yeah. Undetected.
I did it with a gargoyle with a sort of secret handle that they can accidentally sit on and be rotated backwards into another chamber.
That's right.
With some stairs that turn into a slide.
Yeah.
Down they go.
That takes you to the basilisk. Yeah.
Which is a huge slow worm. World's first slowworm basilisk. Very proud of that.
And then you tumble out of the basilisk's mouth, don't you? Mm-hmm. And you find yourself in the toilet of, you don't know which one, but a Costa restaurant, one of the Costa restaurants in the UK, isn't it? And you emerge from it and you're like, what Costa restaurant is this?
Ealing.
And they'll be like, Ealing.
Have they got the Korean noodles? They have. Great.
Can I have some, please? What's just happened to you? Tell you what, sit down. You're not going to believe this story, but I'll tell you it over these noodles.
And you become the Costa troubadour, telling your story from Costa to Costa.
Over the dying embers of a panini maker.
So this week's topic, as sent in by Zachary.
Thank you, Zachary.
Hi, Zachary. Thanks.
Is the essence of fear.
Good grief.
Wow.
So the essence of fear, I'm not really sure what he's driving at, but I'm going to take it to mean fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, the essence of fear is fear, isn't it?
You're saying fear is fear itself? Or is the essence of fear the unknown?
Oh, Michael, yes. Mm. Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. For example, I've never been to Canada, which is why I'm terrified of Canada.
Canada!
And I know about what a tiger can do to my body, so I'm fearless in the face of one.
Because you know exactly how much it's going to hurt and how long you're going to have to live, which isn't very long.
No problem.
Do either of you have a kind of phobia? Diagnosable phobia?
I've got what I consider to be a phobia.
Yeah.
Well, but basically all insects. So when I was growing up, there was this thing in my family, which is that my older brother
would put you in a box full of insects.
Would try to tear my arms off and put me in a jar. there's this thing growing up, right, which is my middle brother was arachnophobic. And that was just kind of, you know, like families have these things where they just go accept, which is he's the creative one. He's the mathematical one. Mm-hmm. He's the one that's afraid of spiders. And he's the one that we feed table detritus to. Or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like there's these roles. So yep. it was basically my middle brother's thing was he was arachnophobic. So we all had to be careful around him to not cover him in spiders, for example. Not try and trap him in giant webs.
Fill his shoes with spider eggs.
Exactly, all that kind of stuff. And also not do a kind of, me and my other brother weren't allowed to do a kind of dance where, you know, you silhouette and you put your arms and legs out because then we'd appear to have eight limbs.
Two heads.
And two heads. But then what happened was I started to realise I was terrified of spiders as well. In fact, all insects.
Oh, but that place was already taken.
But that, so whenever I piped up about it, it was like, no, you're not, Henry. No. I was afraid. I won't name the brother. Bob Free's afraid of spiders. You're not afraid of. You can't be.
You're just copying. Don't copy Henry. Stop it.
You're copying him.
You're trying to annoy your brother.
So get back into the spider pit now. Still. Only Bob Free doesn't sleep in the spider pit tonight.
Bob Free's got arachnophobia, that's his thing, and you've got your beautiful flute playing. That's who you are. Yeah. You are the James Galway of the family.
You are the Galway of the family. You can play flute that is so beautiful that it would make a shark cry. Isn't it? That it would becalm a raging volcano.
Which is great for.
Yeah. That it would soothe a raging storm and that it would bring peace to the Middle East, we're hoping.
Grade five.
That's grade five, really hard. But also, another thing, this is another sort of weird example of sibling rivalry, which was actually, I'm actually more scared of spiders than
Bob the spider Bob guy. Free's,
I'm more afraid of spiders than Bob Free, and I'm good at flute. Take that, Bob Free. So I've had horrible experiences throughout my life of just being... I mean, I find insects utterly horrendous.
So, Henry, is this the first time you've managed to express this suppressed phobia?
I think it might be, actually. I mean, I not only find insects horrendous, I actually find them depressing. They actually really get me down.
Because they're so workmanlike. Because they're unambitious.
They're so focused, Mike. They put us all to shame.
Focus without ambition.
What have I done by 7 a.m.? I've done nothing by 7 a.m. They've been creating some sort of ghastly subterranean galleries.
Mm-hmm. They've spawned 8,000 offspring.
They've spawned so much.
Into one of your old shoes.
Exactly. They've created caverns and sort of... It's the other thing I find weird about about especially hive insects, is the way that it was always described as galleries and caverns and halls and you know, corridors and stuff.
IMAX cinemas.
IMAX cinemas.
With great parking.
Lego shops. All the stuff they build.
I once watched an interesting documentary called Swarm that made a sort of case that you could consider an ants colony or a termite colony to be one animal. And they're all just parts of it.
Everything about them is horrendous.
I found that quite disgusting myself.
I was once on a holiday in Marrakesh. See, this is the other thing which I hate about insects, is they ruin the concept of holidays going abroad. Mm-hmm. I will never step upon Australian soil. Never. I don't want to go to a country where you
have to check the toilet seat.
You have to check your toilet seat that the whole thing hasn't been swallowed by a wasp because they're that big. You know, I don't want to go to a country where you're on the plane on the way over.
The plane might get attacked by a danga danga.
Exactly, or swallowed by a weevily wobbler. Or that you're asleep on the journey over on someone's shoulder. You go, sorry, that's a bit awkward. You look at them and it's just a giant cockroach. Like, I'm a wabbler wabbler, mate. And he pukes on your face and you start dissolving. And everyone's like, oh, chill out, mate. Just stick it under a glass and take it out.
Bloody pasty pom. Relax.
Just, chill out, mate. I can't. So in Morocco. In Marrakesh, one of the most horrific things I've ever seen was I was in bed. So to the left of the bed was a box of tissues. It's quite a nice hotel. So you know, like a little Moroccan box. You know the way a tissue sticks out of a box. You know, the top tissue emerges from the top of the tissue box like a tongue.
And just like a tongue, when you pull on the tongue and pull it out, another tongue comes out. Yes.
Another tongue appears. Like, just like a tongue. A sort of vending tongue, isn't it? A sort of vending machine.
For tongues.
For tongues. And woe betide you, though, if you change the folding mechanism on any of those tissues, because once you've done that, you'll never get it to dispense properly again. Same goes for screen wipes. Then you just end up with a kind of mash of
cautionary tales within cautionary tales in this tale. I'm enjoying it.
It really is. This also, of course, covers washlets. Now, so what happened? So imagine that it's a gossamer thin, isn't it? That it's gossamer thin, isn't it?
Granted.
That tissue tongue that sticks out the top. So I was lying in bed. I looked to my left, looked at the gossamer, and I saw a shadow, a silhouette through the gossamer thin top tissue.
Oh.
Yeah?
Yeah.
A shadow. And you know what it was? It was a cockroach.
Uh-oh.
And that cockroach, like all cockroaches, as I understand them, are all heading towards my neck.
Yeah. And invincible as well. And invincible to the degree that you could deploy a small tactical nuclear weapon and it would survive.
Yeah. No good.
There's nothing you can do.
And you could even just hold it down and cheese grate it and it would still be fine.
You just end up with 1,000 cockroaches.
who are even more invincible and even more determined to approach my neck. So this cockroach was coming towards me, obviously. Mm. And the only way it could do that was to walk up the back of that tissue. So the tissue is sticking up in the air like it does. And I saw the silhouette of it and it walking in that really horribly quick and horribly horrible way, you know, that insects do. So I saw it walk up the top of this tissue. And obviously, as it was walking up, the tissue was responding to its weight a bit, so the tissue was moving.
Yeah.
As it walked up the back of it, its two horrendous, ghastly antennae popped out the top first. See them going over the top? Then its utterly, unthinkably grotesque alien face with mini mandibles and mini hairs and just so many eyes. So
they're tough bastards. They're not even worried about maintaining the element of surprise, are they? This is the essence of fear, right here. They want to maintain the essence of fear. They don't want
exactly
an ambush.
Yeah.
They want to petrify
That's what
you.
They use.
But it has created a kind of, you know, an entrance. It hasn't just popped up.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It's created a kind of light show where it's silhouetted.
It could be, in the right circumstances, it could be considered coquettish. But here it's menacing.
It's the insect world's equivalent of a debutante appearing at the top of a huge swooping staircase in her father's her rich oil baron father's mansion before sweeping down the stairs, but replace her golden locks with the maroon carapace of a cockroach, and give her 8 to 10 legs, barbed legs, and 2 arms which are constantly just removing mucus from her eyes, just like windscreen wipers, just removing layer after layer of mucus. So anyway, so here it comes. The antennae are over the top.
Yeah.
The unspeakable alien face, all the legs and arms.
Armoured abdomen.
Armoured abdomen. Glossy thorax. Mm-hmm. And
wobbling egg sack. And venomous fronds.
Venomous fronds. And, of course, the distinctive miniature version of the Fjallraven backpack. So anyway, so it comes up the top. So at this point, I'm like, I know what this cockroach has got in mind. It's going to get up the top of, it's got to go up the top of the tissue. Mm-hmm. And then, but there's something horrific about this moment, because the tissue, of course, it is completely like, it's moving a lot according to its weight. So it's not like it's going up and down a wall. It's going up and down this thing, which is completely almost weightless, but yet the cockroach's determination is so intense and clear and simple and straightforward and barbaric and amoral. That just goes up the top, and then there's this horrible moment where it kind of teeters. Can you imagine an insect teetering on the top of a piece of tissue on that verge, that the top edge, the nothing? It's almost two-dimensional, but it teeters over the top with all its legs and arms going and its antennae waggling. Yeah, and then it starts going down, but over the other side. So now it's on the other side of the tissue, coming down the other end towards...
It's on your side of the tissue.
The wall of tissue. It's on my side of the tissue. The wall of tissue is... It's not as strong as we hoped. The wall of one-ply tissue.
Did it sort of look like it was surfing?
I'm trying to picture the memory to a Beach Boys soundtrack. It's even more horrific.
Did you flee? What did you do? Did you fight back?
No. Well, I have an incredible mechanism in my body, which is...
Is it the ability to check out of a hotel moments after checking in?
I can check out of a hotel in under 2 seconds. Even the receptionist is like, what the hell just happened? That was incredible. What the hell just happened? He's filled in all the paperwork. He's paid for the peanuts. He's registered a complaint about the tissue.
He's going in the same taxi he came in. This is absolutely extraordinary.
How the hell has he done that? Bloody hell. He's written in the guestbook. Most people don't even bother writing in the guestbook. He's written something in the guestbook.
It's not complimentary, but...
No.
Did it take off, the cockroach?
No. Don't even...
Because the flying thing is... I mean, that's,
no,
that's
don't,
quite...
Don't.
I was watching a similar adventure abroad. Was in Koh Phangan, Thai Island, with some friends, just enjoying a nice meal in a sort of beach bar, sort of cafe. And we were suddenly aware of this sort of... sound.
Yeah.
Oh, that sound.
That's the worst sound. Do that again, Mike. Do that again, Mike.
Like really heavy, sort of quite, sounded almost metallic, as if a sort of Chinook is just overhead. Heavy, heavy duty, heavy gear. And we were also aware of a passing shadow going.
It's not a scout trip, is it?
No.
Oh, God. The silhouette.
It's the silhouette plus
noise. It's
more
silhouette.
But it was, but it was gone in a flash. It was gone in a flash. But then it was... You know, 10 seconds later, it's back again. So fleeting. And then we kept coming back with shorter and shorter intervals. We could never actually kind of saw where this, what direction
it's
coming
in
from.
In that situation, I'm just thinking, please, for the love of God, can it be a mugger or maybe someone that's come to murder me? Please, for the love of God. An assassin.
Please let this be a vertebrate.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Please, I just need a backbone on this guy.
But just the idea that we could never get lock eyes on this thing. I think one of my friends, I think he did eventually spot it and just yelped, and that was it. Abandoned Pad Thai, gone, evening over, done.
And it was a flying cockroach?
And we don't know what it was. because it was hearty. I mean, it would have been at least fist-sized. It was sort of...
I can't deal with it. I'm doing up my top button here because I've got this fear of them going down my neck. I'm having to do up my top button. I've got this fear of them going down my neck. I don't know what they would do once they were down my collar, but I just think insects want to get down my collar. Literally, this is giving me a kind of...
I think
of,
this guy would have just sliced your head clean off and gone down that way.
But Mike, I've had the same experience, similar to that, in... I think it might have been Thailand, in an outdoor restaurant thing, where basically there was lots of people sitting at these outdoor tables, and then every now and then, an entire table of people would all stand up and go, ah! and then they would sit down again and calm down, and you'd carry on. Then another table goes, ah! And just carry on. And you have to track, and you're like, hang on, it's approaching us. The wire is approaching us. You can follow its path. It's coming towards my neck. It's coming towards my neck. The head is towards my neck again.
Time to read your emails.
Yes, please.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your horse.
My beautiful horse.
Let's start off with an email from our old friend Jazz, the polar scientist.
Ooh. Hi, Jazz.
Dear Beans, a light bollocking for Ben.
Bollocking loading.
Miss Anna, bollocking.
Bollocking loaded.
Ooh, that's quite rare.
But also, that's Ben does sift through and select the bollocking, so it's not that, not that surprising.
That's true.
He is the bollock sifter.
What Jazz has done is they've sent in the light bollocking. I don't think there's such a thing. I think it's a bollock or not a bollock.
I don't know. Some bollocks really cut to the quick. I think it's that they can be sharp or blunt.
But also, in a way, the size of the bollock is in the mind of the bollockee.
So you mean I will decide how bollocked I feel by this?
Mm. Exactly, yeah.
I like bollocking for Ben. This is about, we talked about lobsters. Lobsters are not referred to as immortal.
They are in this show.
Yeah.
Well, no, they're right. Lobsters are not referred to as immortal because they, quote, can't get ill, which is what I said.
Yeah.
They can get many diseases as any other animal. However, they age much slower. Over time, our DNA erodes, but lobsters can repair DNA of lots of their cells as it decays, dramatically increasing the number of divisions the cells can go through. We only have this ability in especially important cells, like stem cells. Because they can continually repair their DNA, turning back the clock on aging, and also continue to grow their whole lives, sometimes until they're too heavy and die of exhaustion.
Crumbs.
There are lots of memes about immortal lobsters.
Why, oh why, then, has there not been a film made, a brilliant, dark sci-fi...
With Jeff Goldblum?
Well, obviously with Jeff Goldblum. About someone that's trying to harness, trying to sort of master immortality for humans through lobstering people by attaching clippers to them and lobster heads and antennae and stuff.
What Jazz has just told us is that they're not actually immortal. They just don't age.
Oh, so that's why.
So okay, they cool. Die young and large and exhausted.
They die young, large and exhausted?
Yeah, but they're old, but they're still young. They've just grown so large that they're too exhausted to live.
How big do they get?
That's a good question.
Well, Jazz says that there's a meme on the internet, including a group centred around trying to create a Leviathan lobster god by helping a lobster molt until it grows large enough to dwarf the pyramids.
And good luck to them.
But that's not possible because one of the only things I remember from school biology, apart from gonads, is on plants, is that you can't have an insect or any carapaced invertebrate grow to the size of a bus or whatever because... I think we've discussed this on the podcast before, have we? Because the surface area So if you were to get an ant, basically, we pretty much forced Dr. Custance, I think this may have been before the gonad incident, to explain to us whether or not you could have giant ants that could attack you and kill you and stuff. And he spent most of his time just fielding giant ant questions with us. But basically what he said was that if you can't have a giant ant because if the ant expands to a certain size, the surface area, because that's length times width, expands at a different rate to the volume, which is length times width times depth.
This is verbatim.
Therefore, right? This is verbatim.
How deep is your ant?
How deep is your ant? Is it deep enough to grow to a size where it could dwarf a bus, take over a city, or swallow a whale?
It would sort of collapse in on itself. Is that the idea?
Yeah, exactly. It would collapse in on itself. And it's also to do with surface area and volume and those two things expanding at different rates. And that's quite useful information. You can apply it to things like sandwiches. That's why there's a certain size of sandwich where you wouldn't go any bigger because it wouldn't be able to sustain its integrity. Do you know what I mean? It would start falling about. That's why things roughly have the size that works. Size, you know, sandwiches, cars, desks.
Ants.
Yeah.
I'm very interested to see what Jazz, a PhD level scientist, does have to say about this and whether you're correct.
Ben, can I say, this whole interaction is reminding me of an idea I've had to do with the bollocks section of the show.
Okay, is this a Pompidou? Yeah.
It's a Pompidou. Now it's time for Pompidou section. Pompidou. Which is to introduce something which is called the bollock within a preempto deflector intra self deflecto bollock with a side salad of fuck you. Yeah?
Are you deploying that now?
No, I'm discussing it now.
Okay. So how would that work?
So how that would work is one of us would secrete something into the show, a comment, which is there as a sort of trick.
A bait.
To attract a bollock. Bait. And then once we receive that bollock, we then play you the full version of that bit from the show, which is me saying something like, and that's why all cubes have 12 sides if you count the long bits in between the points as sides, the edges, which are just very, very thin sides, or something like that.
Yeah.
Then we'll get all these bollocks come in, and then we'll go back to me saying that about the thin sides, and then I'll go, was I really saying that, or was that a bollock within a preempto deflector intra self deflector bollock with a side salad of fuck you?
So we lay a trap every episode.
We lay a trap.
And if someone falls into it, that's good.
Yeah, okay.
It's quite slippery.
Well, I mean, this is the end of the series, obviously, but for next series...
That's something for next series to think about, isn't it?
That's very good. It'll tear the podcast apart in general. I mean...
It'll tear the podcast apart.
It breaks the...
The bond of trust.
Between us and the audience, exactly. Yeah.
How about if that happens to you, you have to offer some sort of Pompidou discount with a service that you provide?
That's good.
Well, one of the many services that we provide.
Oh, you mean the listener, the bollocky?
That they provide. Because then you'd only engage in a bollock if you knew that you could offer a Pompidou discount.
Well, most of our listeners seem to be either professional musicians or PhD level academics.
Well, so a paper. They might do you a paper.
Yeah.
Or a sample, for example. If it's a scientific academic, a sample.
Jazz would have to send us a bit of a polar bear spleen.
Exactly, yeah.
Good idea, Henry. Next email. Mate. Is from Kathy.
Hang on.
And Stu.
What's your response to that bollock? Are you accepting that light bollocking? Are you acknowledging it as a bollock?
I think it's more than a light bollock. I think it's a genuine lobsters aren't immortal. I'm sorry. That's bollocking accepted.
Bollocking accepted.
Kathy and Stu of Shrewsbury email.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Beans.
Hello.
My dad, Stu, and I. So it's from Kathy. She refers to her dad, Stu. And I were having a chat.
Ben, wait, I've just thought of something we can do that's quite good.
Yeah.
say Shrewsbury, right?
Yeah.
In a weird way.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? Because it's Shrewsbury or Shrewsbury.
I don't know. Shrewsbury.
Shrewsbury, okay.
And is it... Shrewsbury.
Shrewsbury.
Is there a way that you can say it where someone will write in and we can do that thing on them next season, but even though we've pretended we weren't going to do it till next season?
Problem is, though, Henry, they won't know it's meant to be Shrewsbury. They'll just think there's a place called Shrewsbury.
Shrewsbury?
Okay, isn't that the problem?
It. Yeah, that's one of the problems, yeah.
Hitting problems early doors, aren't we, with this one?
We are hitting problems early doors, but that's...
Are we going to keep this in, then, to show them how badly we're already excusing our...
We could keep this in as a pompadour.
Kathy writes, "Hello, Beans. My dad, Stu, and I were having a chat about Timothy Chalamet after listening to your recent episode. We agree that Chalamet's brought up so much that we think he's very much worthy of a jingle."
Ah.
And I think that's not a bad idea.
Good show.
Here you go.
Chalamet.
Chalamet. Chalamet.
Sleek, glossy hair.
Supple, yet firm musculature.
Take me to the Louvre. Slender biceps.
Pure thoroughbred.
Chalamet.
Equine tail.
Shins of alabaster.
Top end monogrammed luggage.
And the neck strength of a hyena.
Chalamet. He's a luxury prince.
Next email is from Alex. "Hi, Beans. It feels like it's about time for Nigel Haver's jingle."
Ooh.
"Not sure about the styling, but I'm sure you'll find something that captures the raw animalistic essence of the man. Cheers, Alex from Bremen."
It's another good shout.
Haver's. Wow.
Good idea. Here's your Haver's jingle.
Haver's.
Haver.
Haver. Haver's. Sleek, glossy hair.
Supple, yet firm musculature.
Take me to the Louvre. Slender biceps.
Pure thoroughbred.
Nigel Haver's.
Equine tail.
Shins of alabaster. Top end monogrammed luggage.
And the neck strength of a hyena.
Nigel. He's a luxury prince.
Thank you for all your emails this series. As I said, this is the last episode of this series.
Yes,
it is.
But do feel free to tell us, send us stuff in the month-long break. Give us something to talk about when we get back.
Have a lovely June.
No.
No.
May.
Yeah.
Well, both.
Yeah, but you can, yeah, well, yeah, we'll be you can away, say things May. In advance. Yeah.
We'll be here to hold your hand through June.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But May, you've got to do on your own.
You're on your own, I'm afraid, for May.
Thank you to everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Thank you.
What's the address, Henry?
Of what?
Your home address. So people can come and ask you what the URL is for the Patreon.
www.patreon.com/threebeansalad.
Correct.
That's all the letters, THREE, not the numerals.
There are different tiers you can sign up at. You can get ad-free episodes. You can get our monthly bonus episode, which will be coming out this week, I guess. Or you can sign up at the Sean Bean tier, where you get all of that, but also a shout out in the Sean Bean Lounge. And Mike was at the Sean Bean Lounge from last night, weren't you, Mike?
I most certainly was, yes.
Obviously, it was the Fugitives Bingo last night, wasn't it?
It was Fugitives Bingo. Thank you, Ben. And here's my report.
It was Fugitives Bingo last night at the Sean Bean Lounge, which meant no admittance to the federal Bean Marshals, but a high-stakes night for those Sean Bean loungers on the lam. The bingo caller, as ever, was Purple Strawberry, who last slipped the dragnet on Highbridge, Newcastle, and whose charges include sedition by embroidery. Tom Cran, promenading with unmuzzled toad, achieved four corners early doors with Mr. Matthew Reed doesn't know the difference between a scallion and a chive, 5. Bertie Hemming's burlesque career's done, 41. Rowan Brunswick spent a week in a rotating door, 74. And Beck Thornton saw two unusually long pigs, 11. Claire Circuit, Anecdote Forgery, and Simon Sweet, Driving Under the Influence of a Lifestyle Guru, both claimed simultaneously to have achieved two full lines after a call of Time for Tea Trapped a Man in a Crate, 58, but were accused of bingo fraud by Gavin Elstead, who was undermined by his own outstanding conviction for drive-by fishing without a licence. A call of Charlie Nevitt's rash has come back on the underside of his knee, 3, did lead to a single line for delicatessen ticket tout Samuel Korf, as well as for Kristen, aiding and abetting the handling of a salmon in suspicious circumstances, and Bobby Yule of the Jack Yule Gang, salty language in a dentist's waiting room. A hush descended and not a box was scored for Benjamin Bailey's shirty cause his dirty squirty nostrils hurty, 30, Laura Brennan's unlucky for some, 61, nor for Rhiannon McTravers orangutan's shoe size is a baker's 14, 15. Morgan Kenning, offensive sandwich board in a public thoroughfare, declared a stitch-up was in the offing and had to be placated by Bobby Parry, dog collar crime, and Banjo Dave, cyber loitering. But wouldn't believe the game was on the level until, with the call of Matthew Perkins spent his gap year in a vending machine, 17, a cry of house went up from John Griffiths, shaving a Canadian in Carlisle after midnight on a Sunday, Christian, perverting the course of a bobsleigh team, and Daniel Hunt, photocopying sheet music. Hunt was the only one telling the truth and took the main prize of an extensive series of surgical procedures to enable the assumption of a new identity as a Sean Bean body double. Thanks all.
So that's the podcast. And to play us out with their version of our theme tune is Matt from Cambridgeshire. Dear Beans, this is a maritime bollocking and a theme tune.
Ooh, crafty moves, Matt.
Yeah. Not sure about what I think about fitting a bollocking at the end.
I'm not sure how I feel about a maritime bollocking from a landlocked county.
This particular bollocking is aimed at Mike, who mentioned that the punishment of keel hauling was used by the British Navy. Well, Mike, it was actually officially recorded as being used by the Dutch Navy.
Was it now?
Classic.
The use of keel hauling being used on British vessels is nothing more than vague hearsay. In fact, keel hauling has never been documented in any British Navy ship's log. This is corroborated by naval historians, Mike.
Well, they would say that, wouldn't they? Cheeky blighters. No, fair play. I'll accept it. I'll accept a late bollocking. Of course I will.
Bollocking accepted.
Anyway, I've attached an ambient modular synthesizer and kalimba cover of your theme tune in the musical style of an early noughties documentary on the wonders of the cosmos. Probably presented by a very out of their depth Matt Baker.
One of my favourite genres.
All the best, Matt from Cambridgeshire.
Excellent. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah. So we'll see you in June. But until then, goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you.
Bye.